Welcome to B2B Marketers on a Mission, a podcast for changemakers where we question the conventional, debunk marketing myths, provide actionable tips, think differently, disrupt industries, and take your marketing to a new level. From improving your campaigns to making you a better marketer, these are the inspirational stories that will help us change the way we think and approach B2B marketing one conversation at a time. This podcast is brought to you by Einblick Consulting, helping you to stand out in the market and drive revenue to your B2B business. And now your host, Christian Klepp. Welcome everyone to this episode of B2B Marketers on a Mission. This is the show where we help you to question the conventional, think differently, disrupt your industry, and take your marketing to new heights. This is your host, Christian Klepp, and today I'm joined by someone on a mission to deliver better B2B marketing solutions for startups and small businesses. So coming to us from Strasbourg, France, Gianna Sina, welcome to the show.
Delighted to be here, Christian. Thanks for inviting me.
Glad to be connected, G, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation because, man, have we got a lot of ground to cover. So let's dive in. So, G, you've got quite a distinguished background in the world of B2B marketing, but for this conversation, let's focus on a topic that has become part of your professional mission, right? And we spoke at length about this in the previous conversation. How marketers can build trust with the C-suite and the rest of the organization. So I'm going to kick this interview off with something we talked about previously. The C-suite inherently distrusts the marketing department, and shocker, it's marketing's fault. So why do you believe that?
I think there are a number of reasons, Christian, and I think it's primarily due to the nature of work that happens within the C-suite business departments compared with marketing. I think there is a ideological disconnect between the C-suite, senior management, and marketing for a number of reasons. One of those reasons being that pretty much every other business silo within the organization operates in a very cause and effect, let's call it mathematical, almost Newtonian in its approach. You know, 2 + 2 is always 4. Everything follows logic, process, and rigor. Think of it like engineering or mathematics or something, okay? Just by happenstance, the vast majority of people in the C-suite or certainly senior managers seem to have reached that position within the organization through a route which takes them through economics, finance, engineering, science-type métiers, subjects, where, like I say, everything's very Newtonian in its approach. Even economics, you know, the basis of economics assumes perfect information, perfect utility, perfect trust, right? To be able to make the decisions and assumptions within the categories. And all of that is great. As an example, within manufacturing, for instance, supposing you're making widgets. Now, the object of the exercise is to make those widgets as efficiently and as cost-effective as possible, right? And if you can save money on automation or raw materials or, more streamlined processes or, you know, whatever it may be, there is a direct correlation to the efforts that you put in and the resulting output. Obviously, up until the point where, you know, you've reduced the cost of raw materials to the point where it's no longer fit for purpose, right? But if we excuse that, it's all very 2 + 2 = 4. Great. And then you get marketing, where the object of the exercise within marketing is to affect change. Change in circumstance, change in environment, but usually in terms of a change in memory structures or thought behaviors within an individual or individuals. Okay. So this whole economics, finance, sequential logic process breaks down when the target of our efforts are anything but logical in their outlook. People are not logical. people do not behave in a certain way, consistently, constantly, devoid of context, right? And so because of that, effective marketing requires certainly out-of-the-box thinking, but it requires experimentation, and it also requires an understanding of human behavior and how that human behavior changes within context. And we do not, in marketing, operate under the economics fallacy of perfect information, perfect trust, or perfect utility, because the units of measurement that govern the output or influence the process of creating a marketing output do not always have a defined value outside of our own little bubble. For example, there is no such thing as an SI unit of trust, of fear, of regret, of frustration, of anger. Yet these are all variables that can have a positive or negative effect on the likelihood of purchase. So this is why I say there's a fundamental disconnect, where you've got a bunch of engineers or engineering thought processes individuals on one side of the table, and then you've got us on the other side of the table, right? So that's number one. Number two, all that what I've just said is made even worse, exponentially worse, because as marketers, we don't do ourselves any favors. Okay, firstly, how often do you actually have someone in marketing at a C-suite level within, you know, having a boardroom seat? It's very rare. And the tenure for CMOs is getting shorter and shorter. I think the last time I read it was about 14 months, right? So why is this? I think, you know, the example I just listed is certainly one of those reasons. But the other reason is, like I said, we don't do ourselves any favors. And what I mean by that is, let's go back to Marketing 101, right? Marketing 101, know your audience. Yeah? Which means adapt your message and articulate it using verbiage and language and meaning that resonates to the cohort that you're looking to attract. Basic marketing, right? Now, there's no surprises there.
No.
And yet marketers will go into a board meeting and wax lyrical using all of these marketing terms that they know and love and enjoy between themselves. And they'll be talking about salience and resonance and excess share of voice and all of this stuff, which scares economists or finance people to death, right? It's like, oh my goodness, what's all this woo-woo West Coast tie-dye stuff? We might as well go off and, you know, believe in the power of the crystal. So that's what I mean by we don't do ourselves any favors. Marketers need to adopt the language of the boardroom, which is the language of finance.
Absolutely.
And we don't do that.
Absolutely. I mean, you really hit the nail on the head there with it's something so basic, but yet we see marketers violate that all the time about not knowing their audience. And we're talking about internally as well as externally. And that's such a great segue into the next question about, you've brought up some of them already, but talk to us about some other pitfalls that marketers should avoid if they're trying to build trust.
As a marketing professional, whether you're a manager or a CMO, VP of marketing, it doesn't matter. What you don't realize is that your best friend needs to be the CFO, needs to be the accounts person, because much of what you're saying to them and using finance terms like ROI, which is a totally wrong term to use when you're talking to a finance person, because that does not mean a ROI does not mean ROI when you're talking to a finance person, right? And the thing is, you know, it comes back to, you know, marketers are from Venus and finance people are from Mars, maybe, you know? On the one hand, marketing brings insights based upon our understanding of what customers perceive as the value the business brings to them, right? Of which they're prepared to pay for. While finance brings efficiency in the operations of the business with ways to deliver the customer value at the lowest possible cost, right? So obviously, we've got two major contradictory approaches to business, right? And this is where the source methodology, if you like, and the, certainly the processes of finance and marketing sufficiently and significantly diverge, okay? You know, if from a marketing standpoint, I don't think many people who've been in marketing for any length of time would disagree that typically we overpromise and underdeliver, right? And, you know, pushing up business costs against a return that doesn't sufficiently justify its position, right? Which obviously you take into extremes, cost ends up being too high and, you know, in the worst case, it could, you know, damage the business. Unfortunately, finance goes too far the other direction, okay? They're looking to engineer business cost structure from an assumption that all costs are bad, right? And all costs should be avoided. So ultimately, they underdeliver on the customer value component, right? So the result, reducing costs by too much is the value element of the deal is eroded. The customer no longer sees the product or service that you're selling as being worth the purchase price. So the business no longer becomes sustainable, okay? So it's a different approach, but at the end of the day, you get to the same point. As I said, what was lacking is marketers' adoption of the language of the boardroom, which is the language of finance. It's the language of the business in general, you know, based upon underlying strategic goals and measurements, usually set up by the CEO. The numbers person, the CFO, the accounts person, their job is to communicate information in those business terms. And that's where we hear all these wonderful finance terms like balance sheets, profit and loss, ROI, cash flow, you know, EBITDA. EBITDA. I mean, marketers can't spell EBITDA, let alone know what EBITDA is, right?
Yeah.
Now, clearly, marketing's message to the C-suite should be seen as equally important. But since we use a different set of language terms, much of it goes straight over the head of the average CFO, okay? Maybe finance sees itself as being driven from the head, while the classical view of marketing is that it's primarily driven from the heart, right? But, you know, the fact is that there's no one-size-fits-all and endlessly repeatable model for delivering marketing results. And because of that, because you're having to reinvent the wheel each time almost, it puts finance people on edge. They get very uncomfortable, okay? It's a bit like placebos in the medical profession, okay? So some people in the medical profession have issues with the placebo effect, okay? It's not that doctors don't believe the placebo effect exists, because obviously there's plenty of empirical evidence that shows that it does. What they don't like is they have no idea how and why it works, but it does. And in the same way, I think finance has an ingrained discomfort with marketing. Not because they don't think it brings results, but because they can't make a Excel pivot table out of it.
You hit the nail on the head there. I can just imagine, or just I'm just trying to enter the mind of the finance person where this type of talk is driving them insane because they can't quantify it somehow. They can't put that on a spreadsheet somehow. You know,
and you know that's how they think, but more importantly, that's how they work. Okay, right. So. Let me give an example. Okay, so supposing marketing puts together a successful content marketing campaign. Okay, so they put together a range of communications collateral. They've got some articles, some ebooks, some videos, some podcasts, maybe. Okay, and it's all supported by a targeted social media campaign and some emails and sent out to a handful of carefully selected audience segments. Okay. The result is a success as far as marketing is concerned, okay? Page view metrics for the articles are through the roof. You know, there's ebook downloads going out the wazoo. There's millions of video views. You know, there's gazillions of likes and shares on social. And, you know, everybody's going around patting themselves on the back. Great, okay? And as a result of all of this work, it's translated into increased site visits, reduced bounce rates. You know, maybe your SEO goes up a bit, you know? We're all super happy. Except the CFO hasn't got a clue what all this actually means in real terms, okay? What finance is looking for is how all of this translates into what rocks their world, which is cash flow, right? That's what they're looking for with revenue. Mm. Sure, they're happy with the extra traffic and visibility and, you know, all that's great. But there doesn't seem to be anything in their mind, anything tangible to justify us, you know, opening a bottle of bubbly or something. So what the CMO forgot to factor into the equation was something that we all need to consider. Know your audience to get the CFO more enthusiastic, to report those results in finance terms. So, for example, the CFO maybe wants to hear something along the lines of, based on our experience with similar campaigns that we've run in the past, we conclude that if the business spends X amount of dollars on this marketing initiative, we will increase revenue by Y percent over the course of Z timeframe. Okay? So now we've changed things around and presented things in a way which finance people can get excited about. And we've got something that the CFO can work with. Of course, there's more details like that, you know, there's process and metrics and implementation and so on. But we have all of that, okay? We just need to show it in a different way, you know? Show how we decide on customer segmentation from the research that we do, from the interviews, qual and quant, you know, work, data mining, buying lists, or whatever. And then we show how the segmentation work leads us to design the value proposition and how we define channels and how we do the targeting, the positioning, and all the rest of it. So we educate the finance team on how we see these decisions and actions influencing customer buying decisions. Okay? Now, that's at the highest level, sure. And we need to sort of drill down into, you know, time spent per visit, dwell time, bounce rates, click-throughs, all that sort of stuff. But once the purchase changes are measured, we're pretty close from calculating the true cost of those purchases, acquiring those customers, most importantly, comparing that to the status quo. Too often we go into an efficiency frame of mind and we say cost per click, cost per view, cost per whatever, but we don't compare it to anything. We don't compare it to not doing anything. So attribution goes straight out the window. Finance people know this stuff because they're clever. Right? So we can't do things like that, right? So it's ultimately what we're talking about is pivoting this marketing-centric data view into something easy to digest for the finance department.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Hey, it's Christian Klepp here. We'll get back to the episode in a second, but first, is your brand struggling to cut through the noise? Are you trying to find more effective ways to reach your target audience and boost sales? Are you trying to pivot your business? If so, book a call with Einblick Consulting. Our experienced consultants will work with you to help your B2B business to succeed and scale. Go to www.einblick.co for more information.
And that kind of like is a nice lead into the next question about research and strategy and how you can use, I mean, essentially like data, right, to build that trust. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more?
It's not very fashionable at the moment, or in the last few years, to be honest.
Yeah.
Too many people who call themselves marketing is the term I use for the people that I'm talking about, because I don't consider them marketers. They jump straight into the tactical execution and don't do their homework. They don't do marketing with an uppercase M. Okay? And from a process-driven perspective, there are sort of basic tenets that need to be achieved and gone through at various levels, depending on the particular, you know, business that you're offering, that you're set, the product, the business, the audience, the environment, the category, the competitors, all the rest of it. But at the most basic, it starts off with looking at the business problem, not the marketing problem, but the business problem. Let's call it diagnosis stage, working out what the hell is going on. Okay, what's working, what's not working? Find out where the pain points are. And it's not just within sales, or not just within what management say it's going to be. It may be further afield. It may be pre-sales, maybe product management, it may be R&D, it may be support, it may be at a reseller stage. You don't know. But diagnosis is key, because often what happens, from my perspective, is I'll get a business owner or a senior manager come to us and say, I just need you to do X. and they're self-diagnosing, right? And it's like, oh, okay, so you've got no education in marketing, no experience in marketing. Your only exposure to marketing is seeing somebody create a branded stress ball or tote bag or, you know, print some brochures. But all of a sudden, you know what the marketing problem is that needs to be addressed. Is that what you're saying? And this is a common problem, self-diagnosis, okay? If I go to my mechanic and say, I need a new transmission, and after looking at my car, the mechanic says, well, no, all you need is an oil change, what am I going to do? Am I going to believe me or am I going to believe him or her, right? If you're paying an expert, you know, it generally makes sense to go with what their conclusion is. You're afraid to go see another expert, but the idea that you know more than these guys does seem to be a bit of a stretch, doesn't it? So diagnosis is crucial, absolutely crucial, because if you don't know the problem, you can't come up with a solution, right? You have to have insights to drive your approach, because otherwise, you know, you're not in marketing, you're running around waving a wet finger in the air. So diagnosis is a practical thing, and to be honest, it's not hard. It's not rocket science, you know? I have a bit of an issue with people who are a bit precious about data and try to raise it into something, you know, almost biblical in its veracity, when it's not, you know? It's low-down, dirty, hands-in-the-mud kind of work. There's a standard way of generating insights and data. Generally speaking, to a greater or lesser degree, we start off by doing qual, right? So there's initial qualitative research, which takes the form of it can take the form of interviews or focus groups or ethnography or, you know, whatever makes most sense for your particular business so that you can, you know, truly understand the market and get the market orientation side of things. You know, being humble about what you think you know, right?
Yeah.
Understanding the market and the business's place within that market.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Then once we've done that, we channel those insights, the qual, into quant data. Quantitative data, which takes the form tangibly, usually as some kind of survey with a list of questions. You know, NPR is, you know, one of the most popular quant exercises. You know, it's a list of questions that you ask to a representative sample of the market, and you ask them, you know, what do you think of this on a scale of 1 to 10 or whatever else, and can you explain it? You know, it's about as standard as it gets in the industry, really. And it doesn't have to be expensive, this stuff, you know, especially with things like social nowadays, email. You know, you can get that stuff done pretty cheaply. It's not like you have to spend tens of thousands with a market research company like you used to have to do. These things can be done, you know, affordably. Now, obviously, the trick here is to actually get the insights from the data. And it's not because it's not about the data. It's about the insights from the data. Data is dumb. Too many people, I think there's a famous quote by a famous person whose name eludes me at the moment. And the quote was something like, people use data the way a drunken man uses a lamppost for support rather than illumination.
Pretty much.
Right. After that, the traditional next steps after the research and diagnosis are STP, segmentation, targeting, and positioning. So you do the market orientation stuff, you know, identifying the needs and desires of consumers and the related products and services that satisfy them, which is something 99% of businesses already think they know, but they don't know anywhere near to the level that they need to. Because they're biased in their assumptions, because they are not their customer. I don't care who you are, what you sell. The very fact that you sell it, you are no longer your customer. And you need to be okay with that. Right? The drivers, the behaviors, the commonalities, you know, all of that sort of stuff are skewed because you're on the other side of the counter. So once we've done all of the STMP, the segmentation, targeting, position, then we get to strategy. We evaluate the targeting choices we have. You know, we need to make some decision on what we're doing, right? And then position ourselves to those targets. What are the objectives? And the hard thing about strategy, and the reason why so many business owners, especially founder business owners, push back hard on strategy, is because strategy is as much about what you say no to as what you say yes to. And entrepreneurial business founder owners don't like saying no to anything, but you have to say no in order to actually make sense and being able to create some differentiation that new buyers will be able to understand and the messaging can resonate with them. Once you've done all that, then we get to that icky, dirty, horrible tactical nonsense, which is what most civilians think of when they think of marketing, right? So then it's social media and advertising and websites and videos and goodness knows whatever else there may be. But regardless of, you know, industry or business, even size of business, that's pretty much it, you know? Yet what I've just outlined is not the reality of at least 90% of the businesses that I speak with pretty much every week. There's just three stages: diagnosis, strategy, and tactics, and they're always in that order. And even more importantly, each stage to take up equal amounts of your time, and they're also multiplicative. So if you get the diagnosis wrong, you've screwed up your strategy and you've screwed up your tactics. If you get your diagnosis right and you screw up your strategy, then your tactics are screwed. So each one is as important as the other. And tactics, you know, generally speaking, they're split into four execution elements. Mm-hmm. Some people call these the four P's, mm-hmm. but, you know, some people call it five P's, six P's, 10 P's. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's like a... It's, you know, it's like somebody's got cystitis or something, the amount of peas that are coming out of everywhere, right? But, you know, regardless of how many peas there are, it, you know, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
But the point is that what most people see as being marketing is actually just promotion. It's one of those peas. And it's a fraction of what marketing's all about.
Talk to us about the importance of finding that champion to build trust. So people within the organization that can be your advocate. So how can marketers collaborate effectively with that person?
I think it depends about how deeply ingrained marketing is within the organization today. Okay. If it's a marketing-led organization, then the work is, I wouldn't say relatively easy, but certainly easier than if it's something that you have to sort of bolt in new to a greenfield site, and there's two ways of looking at this, you know, that internal champion. The most important advocate that needs to be persuaded and be actively demonstrating their support for what's going on has to be the person at the top of the tree. It has to be the CEO or however the, you know, however the company is structured. If it's a company where it's a founder CEO, you know, so it's a person who actually founded the company and is now running the company, it becomes even more important because just like pretty much any leadership role, you are as, you know, as much leading by example as anything else. And so if subordinates look over and see the actions not being adopted by you, that they are being asked to adopt, it's not going to stick. It's never going to happen. And so it's vitally important that we convey the reasons why the CEO, you know, senior manager, founder, whatever, needs to review their place within the organization and their priorities within the organization to include a marketing-centric data view, and communicate that to the rest of the organization. Because if they don't buy into it, it's not going to stick. The other person at a senior level that needs to be an advocate, which is probably as hard, if you're coming from a position of weakness, which most marketers are, is, as I outlined before, is the finance guy or a lady. The CFO needs to be your best buddy. And it's about, you know, as I explained on that example, you know, pivoting the marketing-centric view into something that is easily digestible into the finance department, okay? So, you know, it may be something simple like, you know, the number of newly acquired customers this quarter against the cost of acquiring those customers this quarter versus the status quo, versus not spending the money and what the customer numbers would have been otherwise, okay? Or it may be breaking down the customer lifetime value of newly onboarded customers versus existing ones. It all depends on the particular business concerned, right? As obviously also with the stated commercial priorities of the organization, okay? But it's important to connect marketing efforts to financial results, because not only are we then presenting the marketing plan as a business use case, but we're presenting the work and the report in ways that finance can understand. And all of a sudden, the CFO gets what's going on. They have a newfound appreciation. I was going to use the word respect. Maybe that's really too strong, but certainly an appreciation to the work the marketing team are doing. And if they understand the logic behind the illogic, irrational approach, then the finance people are more likely to fight for the marketing department when budgets are being set, since they have a clearer working understanding of what goes on, you know, over the other side of the wall. Because at the end of the day, and I don't need to say to you, you know, marketing is everyone's job, right? It's not the job of the marketing department, it's the job of the entire business. And it becomes even more crucial today as businesses seek to adapt to a new engagement model, okay? So the better that finance and marketing can work together, adapting their local data sets and verbiage and expectations to each other's world, then the easier it becomes for the organization as a whole to make valid business decisions. So those are, I think, the two main champions, advocates that we need to work with.
Yeah.
And if we have those things in place, by being able to express the marketing requirements in words and terms that the business understands, the finance can disseminate that, the sales can disseminate that, support,
yeah,
you know, R&D, all of that, it filters down into, yeah, into their own interpretation versions of that basic ethos.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, cannot stress that enough, that the CFO has to be your friend. And I think there's an art and science to that. How the marketers approach these people and forge that necessary alliance, the very necessary alliance. Right. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, marketing can get a look into these sorts of things, Christian. Mm. Right? You know, absolutely. Supposing they're having a conversation about pricing.
Yep.
Right? And somebody around the room says, well, maybe we should get marketing involved. They get laughed out of the room. You know?
Yeah, it's an unfortunate truth, but yeah. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. We're going to move on to the bonus question. So, rumor has it. Aside from running a successful marketing agency, you're also an adjunct professional. I'm gonna repeat that. I just completely tripped over my sentences there. Here comes the bonus question. So rumor has it that aside from running a successful marketing agency, you're also an adjunct professor at business schools in France. So here's the question. Let's just say that somebody after this interview, perhaps it was even that person that called you just now. Let's just say somebody calls you after this interview and says, hey, listen, heard a lot about you, and I would be very honored to pay for your plane ticket to fly you to any business school in the world where you can teach marketing. So if that ever happens, where would you go to and why?
Wow, Christian, you've totally floored me with that one. Totally floored me with that one.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't name a school, but okay. I could tell you it wouldn't be mm-hmm. one of those exclusive, highfalutin, Ivy League type, august institutions.
Okay.
It would not. It would be somewhere which is a lot more accessible. It would be like a community college type environment, because the problem is the sort of stuff that I think should be spread far and wide, that is not being spread far and wide, is being restricted because of accessibility.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, what I'm saying, and it's not just me, there are plenty of other people who are, you know, coming from a similar position. These things need to be said because, and the answer is two things. Number one, it's never been as easy as it is today to start a business. And that is exactly the problem. We're having far too many people starting businesses, adopting an attitude of, you know, if we build it, they will come. You know, if you remember that movie from a few years ago, well, quite a few years ago, 30 years ago, I think it was, right? people who are starting businesses who haven't got a freaking clue about business. Zero. They don't know the difference between revenue and profit. And I'm serious about this. They don't know the difference between revenue and profit. And yet they think they can run a business. And this is why I strongly insist and maintain that marketing should be about solving business problems primarily. And because that's what we're talking about. And everything needs to be framed as in relation to the business, because what's marketing about? Marketing is about generating revenue. Marketing is sales. Marketing is selling stuff. That's the reason why businesses spend money on marketing. Otherwise, they wouldn't bother, would they? They wouldn't need it, right?
No.
You just, right. You know, no. You just open, you know, turn the open sign on your door, you know, physically or virtually, and the orders would come in, and then, you know, 5:29 at the end of the evening, you turn everything off and start counting your cash, and everybody would live happily ever after, you know. The sun is shining, the birds are singing, and your kids will marry millionaires. Wonderful, right?
Yeah, and then you wake up.
And then you wake up, right, and smell the coffee.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's why I think that's the sort of a institution that I would want to go to be able to spread these ideas and these basic precepts even, far and wide.
Yeah. Well, that's fair enough.
I know it sounds like a little bit of like a Miss Universe type answer, you know, but, you know, I don't mean it to, you know, wishing peace on the world and all the rest of it. I don't quite mean it like that.
No, I get it. No, but that's a good answer. It's a good answer. That you don't have it nailed down to a specific institution of higher learning. That's fair enough.
To be honest, yeah. I up until I was sort of shanghaied into this other part of my life,
mm-hmm.
I was very much against formal educational structure, because I just felt it was the whole ivory tower thing, and it was mm-hmm. devoid of any practical application, because 99% of people who are teaching haven't done anything at the coalface in the real world since the days of black and white TV, right? And we're trying to churn out students fit for purpose in an environment that these teachers have absolutely no experience of. And that's why I do it, because I've still got a foot in both camps. So I can, you know, relay my experience as real world experience. Something that is practical, has not come out of some book written in like 1983 or something.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You have the privilege of traversing both worlds as such.
And the thing is, if I lose that, I don't think I'll be doing a disservice to my students, because all of a sudden you're in that academia bubble again, which nobody wants.
Yeah.
You end up, you know, the machinery is churning out educated fools. We've got enough of those in Congress, right? We don't need any more of them.
That That's another podcast interview, but yes, absolutely. Okay. Probably not this podcast, but somebody else's.
probably something else, yes.
Absolutely. G, this has been an incredible conversation. Thank you so much for your time, for sharing your expertise and experience with the listeners. Quick intro to yourself and how people out there can get in touch with you.
Sure, yeah. My name, as you know, is G. Ranasinghe. I'm CEO and founder of Kixedo, a small business marketing agency. We're based in Europe, but 90% of our clients are in North America. Apparently, this internet thing really works. Who knew?
Yes.
Anyway, if you want to get hold of me, you can get me at kixedo.com, K-E-X-I-N-O. The best and fastest way to get hold of me is to find me on LinkedIn. Put my name in LinkedIn. There is only one G. Ranasinghe on LinkedIn.
Yes, last time I checked.
Absolutely. There's some doppelgangers wanting to be me, which I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy, that's for sure. But find me and let's have a chat.
Fantastic. Once again, G, thank you so much for your time. Take care, stay safe, and talk to you soon.
Thank you. Delighted to be invited.
Bye for now.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the B2B Marketers on a Mission podcast. To learn more about what we do here at Einblick, please visit our website at www.einblick.co and be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes or your favorite podcast player.